From the red fox to the white-tailed deer, there's a variety of species on district lands, and not just four-legged ones. There's beautiful birds, majestic trees, colorful wildflowers, and even roaming reptiles. Today, we'll talk about some of the plants and animals you'll find on district lands and offer some tips on how to spot them. This is the Water Matters Podcast.
You're listening to the Water Matters Podcast, brought to you by the Southwest Florida Water Management District. We answer your most popular questions about the work we do and services we offer, including new projects, springs protection, water conservation efforts, and more. Learn about the many ways we serve the community and protect your water resources.
Welcome to this episode of the Water Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Sager, and today I'm joined by Felicia Nudo. Welcome, Felicia.
Thank you for having me.
I should say welcome back because you've been on our podcast before, but your position changed. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So originally at the district, I started out in the land management section as a land manager, but I've transitioned over to the real estate services section where I handle the cooperator agreements. But in general, the real estate services section is responsible for the purchase and acquisition of conservation lands.
But today we're going to be kind of tapping back into your years of land manager experience, because I think it's safe to say you love spotting species on district lands and capturing images, correct?
Yep, that's true.
And so if I'm a visitor to district lands, what kind of variety can I expect?
If you're a visitor on district lands, you can expect to see a wide variety. And that comes from our district boundary being so large. It encompasses 16 counties, with the northern boundary including portions of Levy and Marion counties. And that extends all the way south into Charlotte County. And then on the western side, that encompasses most of the western coast of Florida within that range. And then on the eastern side, it extends into portions of Lake, Highlands, and Polk counties. And so within our boundary, we have 460,000 acres approximately of conservation lands. And to put that into perspective, if you think about the size of a football field, that's about an acre. So that's a lot of football fields.
Yeah, that's a lot of land.
Yeah. And so within that boundary and within all those acres of lands, that's where that variety comes from all the different plant communities that we have.
And if you think about it, you know, you're talking about from Ocala down to South Tampa Bay, the climate can even change in those different properties, correct?
Yep, that's true. You know, if you think about our southern boundary extending into Charlotte County, that's basically Southwest Florida. So that's a totally different, you know, scenario than we have up here in Central Florida.
Makes sense. So before we really dive into the different types of species, I guess we should explain why the district has all of this property. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the district's mission is to protect water resources, minimize flood risk, and ensure that the public's water supply needs are met. And so by purchasing these lands, that fits all three of those things. For protecting water resources, the land around wetland areas such as lakes, streams, canals, etc., that serves as a buffer for things like pollutants and runoff to filter before they reach streams or other water bodies, but also before that water reaches our aquifers. And then in terms of minimizing flood risks, those lands provide storage for water from storm events, so they're not flooding nearby communities. And then for ensuring that the water supply needs are met, we have several preserves that serve that function. We have well fields located on some of our properties that are managed by Tampa Bay Water for the public water supply.
And in keeping with the purpose of these lands, you get a real natural experience when you're out there. And I imagine that contributes to your interactions with the species, correct?
Yep, that's true. So the recreational opportunities on our properties are very passive and nature-based. And so that means that we don't have a lot of development on our properties that we manage. And so that contributes to that natural experience. So a lot of our trails are either at grade or they're mowed or they're single track. And that's my preference. So that means that, you know, the single track trails are like the hiking trails of the Florida National Scenic Trail, and you're very close to nature. But I do realize that not everybody enjoys being that close to nature. So that's where those mode trails come in. They're a little bit wider, but you still get that up close and personal experience.
Yeah, I like a good distance between me and my nature.
Yeah, some people do and some people don't, but we've got that variety.
Yeah, that's nice that there are those options for no matter what type of hiker or just explorer that you are.
Yeah.
So now let's kind of delve into what we might find out there. So let's start with plants. What are some of your favorites that we have out there on the land?
So some of my favorites include kind of the lesser known or less common species of plants. And those include one of my personal favorites are the Indian pipes. And these are really interesting plants. They actually don't go through photosynthesis like other plants do. So they don't have chlorophyll, and they're a parasitic plant. So that means that they're getting their nutrients from other roots under the ground.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and they're white in color. Sometimes they're a little bit pink, but they're very small, you know, maybe about 4 to 6 inches, and they grow close to the ground. And because they don't go through photosynthesis, they're able to grow in areas with dense canopies because they don't need the sunlight.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, but surprisingly enough, those are found in drier ecosystems like scrub or scrubby flatwoods. So that's one of my favorites. Another one of my favorites is the pine lily. It's a very showy flower. It has very vibrant orange colors, and that can be found in flatwoods communities. Another one of my favorites is a Florida milkweed. So that one is very dainty, and I think that's why I like it, because it's kind of small and cute. But it's very inconspicuous if it's not blooming. So it has a very narrow leaf.
Uh-huh.
And if it's not blooming, you're just going to think it's a blade of grass, probably.
I was going to say, I think people would spot it when it's blooming,
yep,
but may not spot it when it's not.
Yeah, I even have a hard time finding it when it's not blooming. But it has a white flower, so it's pretty bright.
And that kind of brings me to the question of, I'm guessing that they're, depending on the time of year, you're going to have different experiences with what plants you see.
Yep, that's correct. So, you know, really wildflowers can bloom anywhere from spring to fall. And with that, you're going to see a wide variety of things such as tick seed. That's actually our Florida state wildflower. It has a yellow bloom. But we also have shades of pink and purples, and those come from things like blazing stars, and some of our orchids are pink as well, like the many-flowered grass pink. But those will bloom from spring into summer and fall. But if you're, you know, not into flowers and you like things like trees, we have bay trees and magnolia trees that bloom from spring to summer as well. But fall is also a really good time for a couple different reasons. So fall, you know, the weather is better in general.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For hiking, it's not so hot. A lot of the grasses bloom in fall, and they're very pretty and showy. So we have a lot of grasses on our properties, like wire grass. We have a lot of blue stems. We have muley grass, love grass. One of my favorite grasses is the lopsided Indian grass. It's pretty tall. It's like 4 to 5 feet tall, and it's lopsided, so that's where it gets its name from. But yeah, I think that's a pretty time because the grasses are just kind of flowing, and you know, then the weather is cooler. So
now I wanted to kind of ask, you know, specify that, because we talk about fall, and technically fall starts in September, but really when we talk about fall, you mean when it starts to cool off, probably a little bit later in October, November.
Yep. Yeah. Later October, early November.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously way more enjoyable time,
yes,
to be out there, because it can get pretty hot and sticky on some of those properties.
Absolutely.
So Felicia, let's talk about some of our feathered friends and talk about birds, because I know there's a variety on district lands. In fact, we even have the Audubon groups that come and do counts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we recently had several local Audubon groups come out and do the Christmas bird count. That occurs at the end of December around Christmas time, and they just simply come out and count the number of birds that they're seeing and the species that they're seeing.
And what is the benefit of that?
The benefit of that is that we get all of that data. And so that's important for land managers, so they can see what species are out there, if there are any invasive species that we might not know about, or any rare or protected species that we might not know about.
So what are some of your favorite birds?
So some of my favorite birds include species like the bobwhite quail. So the bobwhite quail is very small and dainty and has a very distinct call. And you can actually call back and forth to them.
If you interesting.
If you can whistle good enough.
Oh, okay. So it has to be a whistle.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't do it or else I would do it. Yeah. But another one of my favorites is the wild turkey. But we have hundreds of different species on our lands, including numerous species of wading birds, woodpeckers. And then we have some of the protected species as well, like the sandhill crane and the Florida scrub jay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is it hard to spot them because they are so rare?
So it can be hard to spot them. We have several properties that Audubon does surveys for us in the summer on. Those properties include Potts Preserve, Halpata, and then the Gilly Creek and Coker tracts of Edward Chance Reserve. But the best time to see them would be, early morning when it's not so hot.
Makes sense. Is that in for all birds in general? Your advice, if you want to see birds, go in the early morning hours or?
Yep, that's what I would suggest. Early morning hours, the wind speeds are typically lower, the temperatures are typically cooler and more enjoyable, and the birds are out then. So, yeah.
Okay. What about animals? I know we have a variety of creatures living on our lands. What are some of the ones that you see pretty often and maybe some of your personal favorites?
So we have a variety of animals on our lands, and my favorites would be the gopher tortoise, mainly because it's a keystone species. So that just means it's very important for the ecosystem, and a lot of other animals depend on that species. But I like some of the lesser known animals as well, and some of the lesser liked, like snakes. I really like snakes, like the pygmy rattlesnake, because it's small, but it can pack a painful bite, and the coach whip, because you don't see that very often. But above all, anyone who's ever been in the field with me knows that my favorite group of animals include insects, spiders, and scorpions. And that's really just because they are so feared and people are disgusted by them. And so, of course, I'm just naturally drawn to them. One of my favorite insects is the rainbow scarab, and it's a dung beetle. And it has a really, really pretty rainbow iridescent pattern on it. And then one of my favorite spiders is the regal jumping spider.
Oh, that does not sound good.
Yeah, it's actually really very cute. It does a very cute mating behavior where it lifts its legs up. You could probably YouTube it and see it, but they have a really pretty blue and green iridescent pattern on their mouth parts. And so
when you say jumping, how does it jump, and high
people have actually trained them as pets to jump from hand to hand, but it could jump from here to over there or here to over there. So they jump a good amount.
Wow. Yeah, that would not be my... I'm in the category of scared of snakes, but I do appreciate, I understand their importance in the ecosystem. Yeah. So it's nice that they have a fan in you.
Yes.
But, and I'm sure a lot of people would find that really fascinating, but I'll save that in excitement for you.
Sure, that's fine.
So I do think it's important that we talk about the proper way to view these species. Can you give us some general best practices?
Yeah. So, general best practices for viewing these species would be look and don't touch and leave no trace. And there are several reasons for these practices. So when you think about look and don't touch, a lot of plants and animals have defense mechanisms that we really don't want to come into contact with, especially plants. A lot of plants are toxic to us. We just don't know it. I think the biggest one that we do know of is poison ivy.
Right.
So, the last thing you want to do is be rummaging around touching plants, and now you have to deal with poison ivy rash. That's no fun. Also, we don't want to be disturbing the natural habitat for these species. It's a natural area. We want to keep it that way. Along the lines of, you don't want to get poison ivy, you don't want to be grabbing at things and get stung by a wasp or something. That could ruin your experience. But then for leaving no trace, again, we just want to keep our natural areas natural. So we don't want any litter or anything left behind.
Yeah, if you bring something in, you bring it out.
That's
with
right.
You.
Yeah.
Those are important tips to remember. So Felicia, obviously you're pretty experienced in spotting some of these plants and animals, but for a novice like me, Are there resources out there that can help me identify what I'm seeing on district lands?
Yeah, there are a ton of resources out there. One of my favorites we have here on the table, that's a field guide by Roger Hammer, and it has all the Central Florida wildflowers in it. And what's really great about that book is it's organized by the color of the flower petals. So if you're out in the field or you're out on a hike and you see a yellow flower, you can flip to that section and flip through all of those species and see what that is. Another really great resource that visitors can use is the app called iNaturalist, and that can go on your phone, and that can be used in real time. So you're out on a hike, you see a plant you don't know or an animal, you can snap a picture of it, and it will give you suggestions on what that is. Then also, you know, anyone who uses that app can view a map and look at other observations and help identify as well. But the really cool thing about that is that it keeps a log of your observations. So if you see a plant that you can't remember and you think, oh man, I should remember that, you can go back and look and say, oh, this is, you know, this species. But in terms of field guides with books and things, there are so many. There's some for birds, mammals, insects, reptiles, and a lot of them are organized by color and have a lot of pictures. So they're really helpful.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Felicia. That was so much great information you provided. And if you want more information about the species that we talked about today, some of the plants and animals, check out our Pinterest page. You can search SWFWMD to see examples. And if you want information about the lands where you can find these species, visit watermatters.org/recreation. This is the Water Matters Podcast.